Our one male participant, I was afraid you might not be with us, but...
Well, I was a bit frightened, but I saw that.
So we've gone from microbicides, focus on HIV, but other things as well, and TB, which of course is very much influenced by HIV and malaria, and now we're coming back to HIV with David Jamieson. I'm having difficulty with my reading glasses here. David is the Deputy Director for the Program Planning and Country Partnerships with the PEPFAR-funded Supply Chain Management Project, SCMS. I think it's the largest project that USAID has ever created by a major factor. SCMS provides technical assistance in strengthening health. I'm sorry, these glasses really, they're very cute, but they don't work well. strengthening health supply chains to PEPFAR-funded programs and supplies, ARVs, other essential drugs, rapid test kits, and a wide range of laboratory equipment and supplies to host governments and PEPFAR implementing partners. David is based in Washington and has overall responsibility for SCMS relationships with other donors, other partners, and agencies such as WHO, UNAIDS, and UNAID. David is a health sector specialist with special interest in HIV/AIDS and assisting countries to meet the Millennium Development Goals. Before joining SCMS in January of 2006, he worked for Crown Agents, which is well known in this sector for pharmaceuticals, based in the UK for 20 years, so I guess we'll get a nice British accent here, specializing in developing country supply chains. David has worked on projects funded by all the major donors, such as the Global Fund for AIDS, TB and Malaria, World Bank, GIFID, USAID, UNFPA, WHO, and UNAIDS.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you, Maggie, for organising this panel and inviting us to contribute. I apologise for being late. You'd think that when I'd made the effort to get in dressed up in my suit early in the morning, the Metro could make the effort not to break down at Ballston, but apparently not. So I'm sorry for being late. I want to touch upon some of the sorts of areas that Lisa was also speaking of in terms of the challenges we face in ensuring a constant supply of antiretrovirals to patients. And just four sections to my presentation, a short amount on the progress so far. I'm sure many of you already know this, otherwise you wouldn't be here and wouldn't be interested. Some of the global challenges we're facing in the pharmaceutical supply. Strategies that the Partnership for Supply Chain Management, which is the joint venture that manages the SCMS project, has put in place to ensure availability, and some further global actions that we and others in the business think are necessary. So much has been achieved. We know that by the end of last year there were around 6.6, 6.7 million people on treatment. Recent figures from within our project indicate that the supplies we're providing support some 2.2 million people on treatment. Some of the studies show that since the beginning of the availability of antiretroviral treatment, the price has dropped by as much as 100-fold for some of the products. That some products we are now looking at prices of less than $100 per year per patient. But some of that is changing, which I'll mention in a few moments. We do have improved treatment, better quality medical medicines, and there's been a vast increase in the use of generic compounds, which is what which has enabled us to bring that price down so radically. Sure, most of you have seen this chart before, indicating the increasing demand. That takes us to the end of 2009 forecast demand. We know we're beyond that already, and starting now to try and plan, can we get to 15 million on treatment by 2015? I want to return, first of all, to this question of price and the drop in price that we've been able to achieve. And when I say we, I'm not speaking just of our project. It's the collective effort it's other organisations like the Clinton Health Access Initiative. UNICEF are also a major buyer. The funding that's been brought to the effort by the Global Fund, the work of WHO in identifying and promoting the best regimens. This chart looks at the drop-in price for a stavidine-based regimen. And the most, what is most important to us as procurement and supply chain wonks is the effect of the market. That along the bottom of that chart, you see the little pyramids, indicate the number of approved suppliers that have been fully approved or tentatively approved by FDA. And for our project, all of the compounds have to be approved by FDA. And you can see that there's a waterfall effect of, as you get more suppliers in, the price comes down. We see that when the first one or two generics come in, there's a drop usually of about 20% from what the innovator has been providing. When the second or third comes in, you get another 20% or so drop. Once you get to five or six people in the market, that's starting to become stable, and you begin to bottom out, and you can see that in the second line, the second half of that graph as it moves to the right. Here is even more marked. This is the tenofovir-based regimen. And it's only in 2009 that we started to get generics available. And you'll see a radical drop there. But it's been fairly stable since then. It's we have been able to push it down a bit more since this graph was prepared for in the first quarter of this year, but we're still significantly north of $100 per patient per year. And we don't think that's going to come down until we've got more competition in the market. There's some work going on to improve the chemical processing that will enable suppliers to get some cost out of it, but it does seem to be the market that pushes it down. So, move on now to the challenges, if I may. There's been almost an assumption in the market by a lot of the policymakers that prices will just keep on falling. We've made them collectively, they've fallen over the last 5 or 6 years by the orders of magnitude shown in the previous slides. And people tend to think, well, perhaps this is like microchips, where they just keep getting cheaper and more powerful every year. Actually, it seems not to be that a number of the established products, zidovudine, AZT, certainly stavidine, have reached a level that we haven't seen any significant reduction in 3 or 4 years. So we're getting to a level that's fairly consistent for the established products. Tenofovir and others that will come in may enable us to make some further step change down. But what's also impacting it, this is a market, and supply and demand affects it. So if demand goes up, and demand is ever increasing, as we all know, that we are now reaching levels that are close to the maximum of what the current productive base can produce. So there's less incentive to keep dropping the price. So we've got some fairly tight, we're seeing some fairly tight margins for suppliers on established products. And we've had no new players into the ARV market in the last 3 or 4 years, which is surprising with such a vibrant market. Usually when you've got a high demand, a growing demand, you'll see new players coming in. But there are some significant barriers to entry, mainly the investment cost. And the sorts of cost of getting a product approved, getting it registered, and as Lisa said, this can take many years, and suppliers may not be, generic suppliers, which are the ones we're really interested in, have other generics to sell. And there is increased competition for that generic capacity as some of the blockbuster drugs that have been taken in the West come off. Lifestyle drugs, some people call them. I tend to think of them treating the diseases of Western excess, but that's maybe a little controversial. But your suppliers will make more money when erectile dysfunction drugs come off patent than they will out of ARVs, because people like us are always forcing them to sell at a lower price. So these commercial companies will make commercial decisions. And what we're seeing in the generics industry is there's pressure on production. There have been significant changes in the companies. A number of generic companies have been bought by innovators. Some of the generic companies are putting more money into research and development, developing their own drugs, not yet becoming innovators, but there's been significant changes in the active pharmaceutical ingredient market, the API. Used to be that the API and the formulators were largely two separate sort of communities, but increasingly we're seeing API manufacturers moving into formulation, formulators moving upstream to make their own API. Some formulators who've not chosen to go that route are finding that they can't now buy the API they previously had because their supplier is now formulating. So we're getting a lot of tensions within that market. We also are playing catch-up in the market on the demand side to respond to WHO's recommended changes in regimen. As I'm sure everybody in the room knows, we're trying to move away from using Stavidine, but Stavidine is still significantly cheaper than the other drugs in the market. And it's very hard to predict the rate of transfer. That when advice comes out to transfer, many physicians want to move their patients to the new improved, who buys the unimproved washing powder. You want the new one. But that screws up our orders and forecasts as to what we're going to use. We don't want stocks of the existing regimens wasting in storage. So it's hard to predict that and manage it. We had a particular case in Zambia just over 2 years ago when the government decided to switch to tenofovir. They had a graduated plan, but in fact it went like that. And it made it very, very difficult for all concerned. We currently have an extreme problem with pediatric dosing of zidovudine solution for infants following the change in PMTCT and pediatric guidance. For us in particular on the SMS project, we have only one manufacturer tentatively approved by FDA, and they can't keep up. So we're getting rationing coming in. We've avoided stockouts to date, but nobody's getting all that they ask for. We also get some unpredictability in the market. The big players, ourselves, Chai, UNICEF, do talk to each other, and we put long-term contracts out there with the suppliers to help suppliers manage. But frequently you find governments who are buying more on the spot market come in with very large requirements that suddenly no supplier is going to turn away an order of 70 million. They're going to be very interested in that. There was no predictability about that. It's pushed us back in terms of some of our deliveries. We need to work closely with the government of South Africa. They account for 25% of the world demand, and that a lot of it is produced in South Africa, but they are making ever greater demands on the world market. Pediatric is a particular area of concern, as Paula was describing, and to a lesser extent Lisa with the malaria. Pediatric drugs are difficult because they're in small and variable quantities depending on the weight band. The market is smaller anyway, there are fewer kids on treatment. There are many fewer fixed dose combinations. And what we find from a supply chain point of view, which is my expertise rather than the medical point of view, is that because of this fragmentation of the market, we're getting demand from countries that is not economically viable for the suppliers. It's less than their full batch runs. They don't want to manufacture a very small quantity. If they hold it in stock, that's tying up their working capital. It also uses up the limited shelf life, which is only 2 years. So this is becoming increasingly challenging. Just quickly, I wanted to. We've tried to bring in commercial best practices to the public sector. We're consolidating demand across all of the countries we deal with, so we place long-term contracts that meet the demand of a number of countries, which we then ship most of that to our regional distribution centres in South Africa, East Africa, and West Africa for onward distribution to our clients. That puts the product close to the client. It enables us to respond more flexibly. We don't overload the in-country supply chains. We don't, and we can deliver exactly what the client wants, a full range from a number of different suppliers, rather than them having to wait until the last supplier gets there to have the full range of products they need. Also, through the common contracts and some of this stock holding, it enables us to ensure that the smallest purchaser gets the same price as the largest purchaser from within our work. Flip through as quickly as just a bit of boasting about the number of the percentage of generics that we've been able to buy, well over 90% each quarter. And this is the use of long-term contracts. The dark blue is those placed on longer-term contracts. How long have I got left, Maggie?
Oh, well, you went all the time.
Have I? Oh, shall I? Right. Right. Shaping the market, some of the things that Lisa was saying as well. And my last substantive slide, the global actions that I think are necessary. We need additional sources of API. Donors and procurement agents are collaborating to meet the challenges in the pediatric market. We do need better forecasting and global coordination. The normative guidance from WHO, we believe, needs to pay more attention to product optimization using the best and most economical solutions. And when we change treatment guidelines, supply planning needs to be in there to advise people what they're doing. Thank you.